BioInsights podcast.
This episode is called Modernizing Cell Therapy Manufacturing to Reduce Vein-to-Vein Times. I'm Charlotte Barker, and today I'm speaking with two experts from Curate Biosciences, CEO David Backer and CTO Tony Ward, about the need for CAR-T cell therapy manufacturing to evolve and how a new cell separation technique could boost efficiency. Thank you very much for joining me, Dave and Tony. So to get started, I wanted to ask you, Dave, I know you've been in this field for quite some time now. How have you seen CAR-T cell therapies evolve during your time in the field?
I've been in cell and gene therapy for over 25 years, almost since the inception of the technology itself. And, you know, first of all, we wouldn't even be here and having this discussion around gene-modified cell therapies as an example if, you know, scientists and clinicians at UPenn had weren't successful in their initial clinical trials. You know, it not very well funded, completely new technologies, but you know, it was just incredible what occurred there during those initial trials, and then obviously just some really significant funding into the space to follow on with those early successes. The early trials were primarily around a single antigen, CD19. And, you know, as we've come through the years, and what's usually happened is that you're seeing companies that are not only following on with variations of the theme, but are adding additional antigens or looking at other cell types, such as NK cells. And throughout this, you know, what we're seeing is that there's a drive towards more precision, really specific subunits. And whenever that happens, you know, you need to make sure that you can get to those subunits. And we're really talking about, you know, gene-modified cell therapies, but there are also gene-modified, there's stem cells, which are used for rare diseases and the like. And that also takes target cells and then uses electroporation or a virus to transduce those cells and make them gene-modified. And in stem cells, you can't grow those cells up because they're stem cells. So you want to capture every cell possible in its native state, if at all possible.
Brilliant. Thank you, Dave. And what would you say are the key challenges and priorities for CAR-T cell manufacture?
Well, we've already seen that it is a successful and commercializable therapy. There are a number of commercial products out on the market helping people. They're primarily around liquid cancers, but you know, in many cases now we're talking about moving into multiple myelomas instead of just leukemias. I don't want to say just, but leukemias is a smaller market, and also we're moving from fourth line to third line, even second line treatments potentially, and that is exacerbating the original manufacturing process, which was to use the patient's own cells, do a leukapheresis, ship them to a centralized manufacturing place, do a number of different manipulations at that centralized manufacturing place, release test, and then send back to the patient and reinfuse. And it's highly expensive, it's time consuming. And because it's of the GMP requirements, it's been primarily in centralized manufacturing facilities. But, you know, a lot of the primary innovation was around the transduction of these target cells and then getting them back into the patient. And so we, along with a whole variety of other companies, are looking at the different unit operations and improving on them, utilizing newer technologies with the intent in the long run to use these future technologies and get, you know, as close to the patient as possible, you know, through regional centers, through a distributed model rather than a centralized manufacturing model. Both are going to be relevant, and really the centralized model is what most people use today. But I think for the future, if we're going to be able to treat as many patients as possible and really democratize this, you're going to need to look for technologies and capabilities that allow for more of a regional or even at the hospital type of manufacturing.
Tony, anything to add there?
So yeah, thanks. So as Dave noted, I mean, the field's learning more and more about what works and what's not so good. It's very clear now that the data's coming more and more solid as time goes by, but keeping the cells and maintaining the younger and naive T cells, specifically in T cell therapies, are the cells, quote unquote, from a cell engineering perspective. And so with that being a smaller subset of a total number of T cells, there are definitely implications for the field, because now we have to worry about how best to recover and now maintain that smaller subset of cells. And as Dave said, no, it's the stem cells is a rare cell problem, but increasingly T cells become a more rare cell or less abundant cell problem. And so I think that's going to be really important. And especially as you look at the patient profile, you have elderly patients in these solid tumors, which will have less of these naive cells. And you have leukopenic, especially in second and third and fourth line treated patients, they have a very low white cell count. So I think it's going to be really important that technology, more modern technology, can be used to kind of maximize the patient potential, if you will.
Definitely. And Tony, why are the initial steps in apheresis or debulking particularly important?
Apheresis samples degrade quite quickly over time. We see 28% loss over 2 to 8 degrees, for example. At a high level, though, there's really two main aspects of this. There's the physical cell loss and death over time, as I just mentioned. But there's also the innate immune system's response to the cell death that's happening in the leukopak. And so there's a cause and an effect. And so the industry is kind of split on how they want to handle this. It's recognized that fresh cells are indeed the better starting material. But for 2 to 8 degrees, anything past a 24 kind of time frame, you start to see degradation in the quality. And that's because the innate immune system's response starts kicking in. So industry's response has been to start freezing samples. And it's a bit of a dilemma, because the freeze-thaw process is far from perfect. Even with lots of improvement and a significant effort by now lots of companies, the process is still, at the end of the day, is highly variable and loses, you know, still a significant amount of cell loss, especially when you start talking about having just a few cells that are the ones that you really want. So the other thing about a thaw process is you've got a recovery period as the cells come out of a thaw process, which is adding time and variability to the overall manufacturing process. And then it also comes out of the, you know, that variability is kind of coming out of the patient's cells' ability to actually withstand the process. And so at an industry level, there's really no consistency as a result, because the freeze process doesn't always occur. Even then at the collection site, sometimes it happens at a regional processing center. So the variability is really exacerbated, not only by the patient state of health, but also by the process used, the timing of the processing. And so, you know, the product is the process. And so I think it's really important that you've got that variability. And then on top of that, the variability is really exacerbated by the use of old technology. We look talking about 30 to 50 year old techniques using centrifuges, been around since 1950 or even before that. You've got specialized density gradient media, which is not inert. You have red cell lysis being used, which is causing acidification and messes up the metabolism of the cells. So you've got combinations of these. And so this is really a landscape of a lot of variability compounded by processing variability on top of it. And so, as Dave kind of mentioned, it's rarer cells are more important, but for T cells, I mean, I think there was a sense in the market that you could kind of quote unquote grow your way out of the problem. But the recent data clearly shows you that there are real therapeutic benefits to having a shorter time in culture. And therefore, this starting material quality and recovery and non-propagation of issues from the response to the cell death is really an important thing to start thinking about as we get into these commercial therapies that really do need these rare cells, these relatively rare cells. And this is exemplified, frankly, by, you know, the out-of-specification products, even in a really successful products such as Carvykti. So you know, it's really important. In fact, multiple developers of these commercial therapies are stating now openly that their success rate is really directly correlated with the quality and quantity of the starting material.
That's great. Thank you, Tony. Dave?
Yeah, thanks, Charlotte. I would say that, as Tony mentioned, there are a variety of different protocols that people are using as we move into the next stage of autologous cell therapy manufacturing, along with allogeneic. We're all trying to do the same thing, which is to get to the patient will get their cells reinfused back in the cleanest and the fastest way possible. And so we, you know, today's discussion is really focusing on the starting material. And when we say starting material as a GMP term, you know, it's the patient's cells is the starting material. So you know, you can't just make another batch, or you don't want to, if at all possible. So, you know, really trying to do everything we can to make sure that those precious patient cells are protected, taken care of, so that downstream activities, right, to create a gene-modified cell can occur in the best way possible. That's really the imperative that we've put on our company.
Absolutely. So let's talk about how Curate is addressing some of those problems that Tony was talking about. So what does deterministic cell separation microfluidics involve, and how does it differ from commonly used techniques, Tony?
Yeah, thanks, Charlotte. I mean, so DCS, and I'll use the term DCS, but it is deterministic cell separation. It's separation in a deterministic way of cells on the basis of size rather than on the density. I talked about centrifugation and lysis steps. We don't have any of those detrimental attributes coming into our system. So we have a fully closed system with a consumable, has about 3.5 million microposts in an array, where the microposts are about twice the size of a typical monocyte. So it's very, very highly precision engineered. And they're arranged such that the large cells, in this case, leukocytes, are gently deflected into a clean and parallel buffer stream that effectively washes the cells individually while letting the small cells, platelets and red cells in this case, go straight through. The red cells interact with the array as a disk, and so they tend to flip on their axis around the post and then subsequently roll through the device, and they come out in the small cell and plasma fraction. So this really eliminates the need for a lysis step and the acidification that comes out of that process, which is metabolically damaging. It causes chemokine stress responses and so on. So the key distinction, I think, around the technology is because the array is so incredibly efficient, it's got a very consistent results and this wash process I just described, but you end up getting a combination of four kind of best-in-class metrics uniquely combined. So we have an array that's over 95% efficient at recovering the large cells and does so in an unbiased way when you compare it to a density or lysis-based approaches. So we get all the cells, all the naive cells that we were talking about earlier on. The overall process has a less than 7% coefficient of variation. And this is unheard of. And so when you hear people talking about the product as a process, you know, right now, the variability is massive, and here we are talking about a 7% coefficient of variation on the input material. So you'll get what you get out of the patient, you'll maximize it. Then we talk about the efficiency of removal of separation. It's over 99.5% efficient at removing platelets. That's over 3-log wash capability. And so that's a combination of these things. It gives the cells an instant scrub, an instant separation, and an instant wash. And so it's really clear that when you have something that is, you know, significantly 3- or 4-fold better in each of those unit operation attributes, that it's got a potential to be a really revolutionary kind of transformational technology. And they, on their own, change in just platelet removal or a wash removal can bring around significant benefits. But when you combine the two, they're really uniquely powerful.
So tell me a bit more about how DCS can improve the process, and can you optimize expansion of T cells and reduce manufacturing time?
Yeah, so in the simplest of terms, I mean, our T cell engineering objective is to really convert the youngest cells we've been talking about, keep them as young as possible and as fit as possible while targeting them towards the tumor specifically. So inherently, it's obvious that having the best recovery with most predictable cell engineering And the ability to do that consistently to make the highest quality dose is really the kind of the practical goal for the developers. I just talked about this 95% efficiency and a 7% CV. So you have this great recovery without bias that automatically puts you into a better position to start the process off from. You compare that to an elutriation approach. We have third-party data, for example, showing we were able to recover 30% more of the naive or younger T cells in the first step. So that's an instant 50% boost right there to the number of cells. In another third-party study, they recovered twice as many total T cells with our technology compared to a density gradient-based approach, an automated density gradient. And so going into the engineering process with that much confidence that you can reliably get the most out of the samples is the first step. And you know, the need to harvest perhaps twice may be eliminated, for example. We don't know this yet. But specifically important, if the T cells, to get to the subset, are going to require multiple cell selections. So this is just recovery alone that enables a shorter process. And we talked about the wash, which I can get to a little bit more detail. But it's really that process where you recover these cells. You can recover the cells, do the selections, and then get into an expansion process. Because of our recovery, we have one collaborator, for example, who's targeting a two-day manufacturing process, which is significantly shorter than some of these 5, 10, even 12-day processes. Our internal data shows, though, that our cells, because of this wash process, generally, we are seeing about a 30% fold better expansion at day 12. So it's really a combination of the recovery and the biology being better because of the wash situation that these cells are able to expand.
That's really interesting. And I'm curious, does debulking starting material or this sort of more sophisticated cell separation, does that have an impact on then any subsequent genome editing steps?
Yeah, and so inherent to the accumulation of benefits, if you will, you have these four parameters which are really kind of coming together. We see a biological advantage as well because the wash separation process itself is so unique and so different. When we've done comparison studies, we found actually that when we looked at the density-based separations, that they are actually still containing platelet aggregates in the quote-unquote product fraction. And that those aggregates, they persist for several steps as people try and wash them out over time. And so it's just 30 minutes, 40 minutes exposure to aggregated platelets, which are still biologically active. And so it's important because they're releasing pro-inflammatory cytokines, chemokines, which are then acting upon the T cells in the case of T cells. But it's also going to be true of any cell type. And what happens is signaling events start. I mean, signaling happens in 5 minutes or so. So this almost near instantaneous separation that's unique about the DCS process that allows the cells that are generated to be less activated, about 50% less activated. As a result, we generate approximately 50% less, fewer regulatory T cells in a T cell expansion. And that's really important, especially as the T cells are known to be impacting the clinical efficacy. So while we're not doing that per se directly, we know that the cells are going to be headed in the right direction, comparatively speaking. And we've also seen, frankly, better lentiviral transduction efficiency as well. Again, it's because of washing out cytokines, in that case, RANTes. So all the benefits that are directly related to the efficient and timely removal of cytokines are, we're just beginning to scratch the surface off. So it's really not just the fact that you're improving the editing step, it's the improvement in the ability of the cells to recover, be engineered, and then deliver the cells of the right phenotype. So it's really a combination of benefits that are adding up to a better starting material, having a massive impact on the overall process and shortening the cycle down. And so what's really interesting is we now know these cells, if we do a DCS preparation and then freeze them, they still retain these positive attributes. So it really kind of proves the point that this epigenetic signaling is happening during the FICAL process, for example. And so it's that short exposure when they're getting exposed to these cytokines, chemokines, is really making a difference. And so it's really that combination of things that are letting the cells going in back into the expansion. So what we see there is we're seeing less of these cytokines impinging upon the expansion, which is why we think we get this 30-fold expansion, combined with the fact that we're making less T-reg cells. So this is really a good explanation of just a better starting material. And that's why the product as a process is really rings true, because if we start using this more and more, we'll have much shorter and much more efficient processing.
Tony went into a fair amount of detail on some of the very interesting things that we're seeing with these cells and the biologic advantages that we're seeing with the cells as they're treated as a key starting material. And, you know, we do believe it ends up being that every one of the innovators that we're talking with, you know, they when they're coming to us are interested in basically seeing how their current product is going to be benefited when they are using kind of starting material that is in its best state. You know, one of the things that I've heard in the past is that, you know, when we all had a TV, color TV in the past, you know, it was terrific. And then when HD TV came out, you really started to see what you've been missing. And these new innovations, and we're not the only company coming into this space, but when you have these new innovations, all of a sudden you get clarity on the possible. And that's what we're so excited about.
Brilliant. And Dave, can you elaborate a little bit on how manufacturing processes can help ensure the clinical efficacy of the product by removing unwanted factors that can impact transduction efficiency?
Well, we clearly can't say clinical efficacy at this point. It's really going to, we just launched our product commercially earlier this year. And, you know, it's a process basically getting clinical trials started that will utilize a Curate system in the workflow. But what our advisors and the folks that we're talking to, that's the next step, is that people will do an A versus B type of analysis. And obviously, once we're into the clinic, we do expect to and hope to see some of these positive signs realized. But if you take a step back, you know, we really just want to make sure that the right cells are used and they're in the right condition. You know, if you follow the clinician's credo, it's first do no harm. And so, you know, that's our hope, is that we can do the necessary, which is the cell separation to get to the target cells, but do it in the gentlest way possible so that the next steps can be as efficient as possible. And you know, I would say that, again, as in the future, as we potentially move from centralized manufacturing to more of a distributed model, assuming that that would happen with in the future, and people have quite often talked about this as the ideal way to scale out rather than scale up, which is what we traditionally see in biopharmaceuticals. These attributes that we're talking about of do no harm, which could potentially mean don't even freeze the product at the very beginning for shipment because you don't have to ship. Take care of the cells, process them as quickly as possible. Don't have as many passages as might traditionally occur because you don't need them. You have more of the right cells to begin with. All of these things incrementally could lead to the ability to treat more patients.
Thank you, Dave and Tony, for sharing your insights with us today. This episode was brought to you in partnership with Curate Biosciences. If you enjoyed listening, don't forget to subscribe to the BioInsights podcast.